apply that and repeat it. So this is square. But the same filter is applied twice. For the xz, the transfer function, when you apply the same thing twice, it's just a square. And there is a factor 1 over 32, which is an approximation, so that the division by this quantity can be performed just by shifting 2 to the power of 6, 1, 5, 5. So you just shift 5. And this can be expanded and written in a difference equation form, yn is 2y n minus 1 minus y minus 2 and so on. That is a moving average filter written in a recursive form. Now, the advantage is these coefficients are all integers. And the division here is 1 over 32, which is an approximation, but that facilitates fast computation for real-time application. The sampling rate is 200 hertz in this application, and the cutoff of this filter for sampling rate of 200 hertz is 11 hertz. It's extremely low frequency. If you're not interested in the wave shape of the QRS, this will distort the QRS and make it very smooth, but it will effectively remove all noise. It introduces a delay of 5 samples of 25 milliseconds, and the attenuation is greater than 35 dB at 60 hertz, so power line artifact is also removed, and any harmonics will be removed further down. So it suppresses power line interference and harmonics if present, so almost all noise will be removed effectively by this filter. And then they have a high pass filter, because you want a band pass filter at the beginning to remove low frequency artifact. The high pass filter is designed to reduce low frequency artifact. And this high pass filter was also approximated, or was also designed using another low pass filter, and is expressed as an all pass filter minus a low pass filter. So high pass filter is one minus a low pass filter. And that's what they did. So they designed another low pass filter. And this low pass filter is 1 minus z to the power of minus 32 divided by 1 minus z to the minus 1. This is integration over 32 samples. And this is the recursive implementation as we saw earlier. So please relate this to the expression I gave for the 8 sample moving average filter in a recursive format. I don't remember the equation number, but we saw it yesterday or today. So, this is a low pass filter expressed in a recursive manner, so you can minimize computation. It is just this. You are not averaging over 32 samples, but it is done in this manner. The transfer function of the high pass filter is an all pass minus this filter, and that is given as z to the minus 16, that's a reference point to subtract, minus 1 over 32, that weighting factor is brought here for average. And the low pass filter is here. So the high pass filter is realized as 1 minus low pass. The net output of the high pass filter is given by this x n minus 16 minus 1 over 32, that is the low pass filter. If you combine them, then you have another relationship, which is shown here, and you could implement either way. So what you need in your exercise to implement these filters are just these coefficients as A coefficients and B coefficients. In MATLAB, you have the command filter input signal B and A. So you need to define an array B that will be the set of coefficients for the moving average part, which will be the coefficients applied to the x signal. When you have an input and output, either that or this, whichever you like, you can implement them in parts or combine them into one. If you were to look here, then the b coefficients are 1, and then for the other delayed samples for minus 1, minus 2, minus 3, they're all 0 until minus 16, then there is a 1, and then you have another whole bunch of zeros and for 32, a delay of 32, you have minus 1. And the A coefficient is minus 1 over 32. Or there is a 32 there too, the back. So you have to convert these equations to the A and B coefficient series and give them to the filter command in MATLAB and give the appropriate input from one step to the next, to the next, to the next. So these filters are implemented one after another. So these are the B coefficients, these are the A coefficients. And here are the B coefficients, these are the A coefficients. And you have to put them in appropriate sequence of delay, starting from the current sample going backward. And if some samples are skipped in between, you have to put zeros for n minus 1, n minus 2, n minus 3, and so on. Okay? So put that in MATLAB and implement that. So this high pass has a cutoff of 5 hertz. Remember that previously I showed an example with a cutoff of 2 hertz, and the QRS complex was, not the QRS complex, but the PQ and the ST segments were distorted, and at the end of the T-wave we saw a distortion. Obviously, with a cutoff of 5 hertz for a high-pass filter, the P and T waves will be almost completely removed. And there will be distortion of the waveform. But again, we're not interested in the waveform now. This introduces a delay of 80 milliseconds. So you had a question earlier. You have to load all of these delays and subtract them. The derivative operator was approximated I said earlier it was 1, just the difference. No, it is. It uses 4 samples, and this is an approximation that includes smoothing. And the transfer function of this is given in the paper by Pan and Tompkins and the book by Tompkins. I don't have the transfer function here, but what I will ask you to do in your MATLAB exercise for this problem, you take the coefficients A and B of each filter, but if a filter has multiple components, you have to put them all together and get the net A and B coefficients for the high-pass filter, for the first low-pass filter, and then for the derivative. And in MATLAB, there is a command called FREQZ, which gives you the transfer function. So you can give the coefficients B and A to the FREQZ command in MATLAB. I believe all of those instructions are in the lab handles.
I don't know, I'm not sure about this one.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I have given those. But the command you need in MATLAB will be filter and FREQZ.
Oh, yeah, these are the instructions. Yes.
I'm pretty sure I have given them in the MATLAB and in the instructions for the lab. You give them into the, you put them into the command FREQZ and you get the transfer function. And I suggest that you plot them as I have shown earlier as the magnitude and phase and observe the characteristics of each filter. Okay. So this is the derivative operator and it approximates the ideal d over dt operator up to 30 hertz. The ideal d over dt operator has a linear gain with frequency. The discrete derivative operator, as you saw, has a cosine. So it tapers off at the end. But if you take just a small low frequency region, then the discrete derivative operator or difference operator also has a linear behavior and approximates the ideal derivative. This approximates the ideal derivative up to 30 hertz. But the signal has already been pre-filtered down to 11 hertz. So this is adequate. So this is very close to an ideal derivative. So it suppresses the low frequency components of the P and T waves. We don't want those. It provides a large gain to the high frequency components arising from the large slopes of the QRS complex. But when we say high frequency here, now we are limited to only about 14 hertz, 13, 15 hertz. It was minus 3 dB, was it, at 13 hertz? I don't remember what it was. No, 11 hertz, was it? The cutoff is 11 hertz. When FC is given, I would presume that it's minus 3 dB. So it is 11 hertz. So when we say high frequency here, we are limited to 11 hertz at minus 3 U. When you square, makes the signal positive and emphasizes large differences and relatively will suppress the small values for the PMP. Integration is a simple moving average filter. Xn and from Xn minus n minus 1 with n equal to 30. So this introduces another delay. So this is simply a moving average of 30. And I thought they have approximated this by 32. Anyway, you take the output of the derivative operation and smooth it with a moving window, and n equal to 30 is recommended for sample frequency of 200 hertz. So the net result that is expected is, if you have a piecewise linear approximation of the QRS in this manner, the output will be a trapezoidal pulse. It won't be a rectangular pulse because it has to build up. It's been smoothed already. This is the effect of smoothing. Assuming that you had a rectangular pulse somewhere, the last smoothing operation will add this slope. And according to Pam Tompkins, the width of this trapezoidal pulse output, you don't get a trapezoid, but approximately, it will be the QS width or duration, two times that, related to the integration of the derivative over this, plus this R, and that is W minus QS, where W is the width of the integrator window. This is the effect of the last integration. So this will be W plus, the net effect is W plus QS. And Tompkins also gave an adaptive thresholding algorithm. If you wish, you can implement this, or you can implement your own peak detection algorithm. I'll leave that open to you in the lab exercise. Write your own peak detecting algorithm or implement this. Some of my students have done this and it works. Or you can use something else. We're not doing this online, so you can write anything that works in that lab. Running estimates of the signal and noise peaks are maintained. There could be a signal peak related to QRS and a noise peak related to something. But we know that if you have a peak here, and another peak comes after 150, 200 milliseconds, we know it cannot be a heartbeat again. So there has to be a minimum gap between successive peaks that you will call as QRS. There could be premature ventricular contractions, but there is the minimum QRST duration related to the action potential of the ventricles. That duration reduces your heart rate, but it will not go below, let's say, 200 milliseconds at the minimum. So you can have a safe limit and say, within 200 milliseconds, there cannot be two heartbeats. Then, if you detect a peak and call it a QRS, and another peak comes within 200 milliseconds, you say that is a noise peak. And you retain that reference. So there are signal peak level and noise peak levels maintained by this algorithm. SPKI is a peak that the algorithm knows is a signal peak confirmed by past processing. And NPK is a noise level. And there are two thresholds, I1 and I2, to categorize the signal peaks detected as QRS and noise. And every new peak detected is characterized as signal or noise. And the signal is QRS. If a peak exceeds threshold I1 during the first step of analysis, that peak is classified as a QRS, signal peak. And there is a search back technique that is used. If the search back technique is used, the peak should be above another threshold that is called I2 to be called a QRS. That is, if there is no beat for a long time, you don't declare the patient dead immediately or set the alarm, but instead you say, oh, I missed something, let me go back and search. Perhaps there was a peak that was a signal that I did not recognize because my threshold was too high. So if the search back technique is used, the peak should be above some other threshold I2 to be called a QRS. And peak levels and threshold levels are updated after each peak is detected and classified. So it is a running estimate and running thresholds. They're adaptive. SPKI is defined as 0.125 peak I and so on. It's a combination of the noise and signal peak. And NPK is the updated noise peak, which is again a combination of the signal and noise peaks, if this is a noise peak. So there is a continuous averaging built in. So the algorithm keeps learning from the levels of the signal. The thresholds are also updated in this manner. So if you wish, you can put all of these in your code. Otherwise, use any peak detection algorithm. The updating formula for SPKI is changed to this. If a cure is detected in the search back procedure using threshold I2. Now there is a search back procedure, which I think comes next. So they're making two RR interval averages. RR average 1 is the average of the 8 most recent beats. Your heart rate changes. So you have to update the RR interval so you know when to expect the next beat, or what is the average RR interval between beats most recently. And then RR average 2 is the average of the 8 most recent beats having RR intervals within a range to accommodate arrhythmia and ectopic beats. So there's a low limit, 0.92 times average 2, and a high limit, 1.16 times average 2. So they have this range that is maintained. And if a QRS is not detected for a certain interval that is specified as RR missed limit equal to 1.66 RR average 2, now these numbers are derived by practice and testing on a large database. So there are numbers that are recommended by the investigators. There might not be any particular theoretical basis behind these, but practical limits. Some limits could be based on physiological factors, such as you cannot have two heartbeats on the ventricle coming within 100 milliseconds or 200 milliseconds. So those are taken into account. So if a QRS is not detected in such an interval, then the QRS is taken to be the peak between the established thresholds in the search path. Whatever peak you have there is a QRS. So that is what they did. And they tested with a fairly large database. They got a low error rate of 0.68% on 33 beats per hour. Now this percentage is low, but over an hour, you have 70 beats a minute, let's say, and 70 times 60. So that's number of beats. And there were 33 beats per hour. That's the error rate. Is that significant? I'm not sure. It depends upon the application. On a percentage basis, it is small. On a database of about 116,000 beats from 24-hour records of 48 patients. So they tested significantly with a large database. So here is an illustration of the application of the same techniques, the Pan Tompkins method to the ECG from figure 3.5. Let's see. So I already filtered here. And then we have the bandpass filter output from the Pan Tompkins algorithm. This is the derivative. This is after squaring. So the p value is suppressed. There are two positive and negative values here that are now converted to two positive spikes within the QRS. The output for the T-wave is suppressed after the derivative and squaring. Now this is not good for peak detection because you want one peak, so you smooth it. And the final integrator gives an approximately trapezoidal pulse. It's not fully trapezoidal, but there are now these little steps. So you have to make sure that you don't detect this peak, but that peak. So if you use a very simple peak detection algorithm that says find the local maximum, you may hit something like this or that. So if you're writing your own peak detection algorithm, you have to be a little bit careful. So detect one of these points, perhaps that, and then there is a delay. You have to work your way back. If you go straight up, That's about 1 point, a little before 1.2 is here. The QRS is there. So there is about almost 200 milliseconds delay that you have to fix for that. Okay. All right, we'll stop here. It's 1 o'clock. Why don't we take a 1 hour break for lunch and meet at 2 o'clock?